Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Each week, I'll take you on a dark journey through terrifying true urban legends, bizarre true crime cases, chilling tales of backwoods horror, and more. So if you're looking to join a passionate community of the darkly curious, check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, stay curious.
DGS on a Friday. Dave's out today. Rachel, Kevin, and Andrew hanging out with you until 5 o'clock, and then I'll be joined by Matt Pauly. Matt and I have got you covered from 5 until 6 with the Redbird Rush Hour, and then, of course, Matt will have Sports Open Line leading up to Cardinals baseball. And keep in mind, they're in Arizona tonight, so it's an 8:40 start time, 7:45 for the pregame with Matt. So you'll have almost a full Sports Open Line leading into the pregame show tonight, Cardinals and the Diamondbacks three-game series in Arizona. We'll talk more about that with Bernie Miklas coming up at 2:30, and Bernie will be with Matt and I for the Redbird Rush Hour. So we're busy on the baseball side as we go through the day today. We'll also have Alvin Reed and George Mahey joining us a little bit later on. Dave Murray will give us the weather at 3:30 as usual. All right, so this is time to, stairway for me? Stairway to me?
Mm-hmm. Stairway to
Stairway to Kevin. I had a story that Kevin. I saw that is really, really interesting to me, and some of it's a little bit sad in a way, but there's a lot to unpack in this. And then I participated in the activity just now during the top of the hour break. And if you're on the stream, if the picture that is coming up is I'll try to show you the picture that I used for this, because what I saw was a story from Rolling Stone that there are people who deal with like body image issues. You know, some of it is serious, like body dysmorphia. Some of it's a little less serious than that. But they are using AI to rate their looks.
Uh-oh.
And they are not happy with the responses that they're getting, which I find to be really interesting. Right? Like, if you know that you have body image issues, would you ask ChatGPT or some other AI to evaluate you? Or maybe is that part of having it? And
well,
I don't understand that.
I think it's part of having it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a hope that things are either going to turn out differently than, you know, maybe you're expecting, or it's like a self-harm, like, yeah, and this is proof that I'm not attractive. I could see why people are doing it. I'm not saying it's a good thing or a healthy thing, but I mean, I see this all the time on different subreddits. People will be like, roast me, rate me.
Right.
I see it on TikTok. How old do I look? Women will post a video and be like, dude, I know you guys are going to kill me, but how old do I look? And everybody is so much meaner than they need to be.
Yes.
I don't know why people put themselves in this position, but there's clearly a driver for a lot of these people to either get their feelings hurt or they're hoping for a different outcome. I'm not sure.
I'm fascinated by this because, number one, you know, as we've talked about, these quote unquote AI, they're not really AI.
No,
they're not. I mean, they're amazing tools. They can do a lot of cool things. I did this test on ChatGPT during the break. This is what I was testing. I put in a picture of myself from, I think it was October, but it was a costume trivia party. I think I told you guys that, right? I was dressing up as the Tom Cruise character Steve in The Outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the jean vest and all that kind of stuff. As soon as I put the picture in, ChatGPT said, "Looks like that person's recreating Tom Cruise's character Steve Randall from The Outsiders." I'm like, "Dang,
that's kind of creepy."
That's really good. So I was like blown away by that. But then I said, can you rate the attractiveness of the person in that photo? And the response was, I can't do that. I can't rate the attractiveness of real people in photos. Everyone has unique qualities and beauty is highly subjective and personal, which is an interesting answer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if they're different AIs that people are using, although one of these cited a ChatGPT answer. And the ChatGPT answer that was cited here, maybe this is, I'm not using the paid version, so maybe the paid version gives you more or can do what the free version can't. But the person posted a picture of themselves, and the response from ChatGPT was super mean. It was like, this looks like a person who's given up on themselves.
Yikes.
It's like, Is ChatGPT now like the mean internet jerk? Or like, is that the direction this is going? But I found it interesting because it wouldn't do it. And I didn't prompt it further. I didn't say, well, can you try? I didn't do anything like that. But it did follow up. It said, that said, the person in the photo has a confident presence, especially with the tough guy denim vest and serious expression. So like it will give you a little bit, but it didn't get like straight to the point like, you're fat and stupid, which it seems to be doing to a lot of the people that are posting to the subreddit, because there is a subreddit about this. It was I think it came up from a body dysmorphia subreddit. So again, if you're participating in that, you know that you are dealing with that, and yet you're asking AI anyway.
Yeah.
And is AI the, and I don't know, I wanted to branch this out more into the broader one. Are we just starting to become too dependent on this? Because we talk about college students are using it and they rely on it. High school students are starting to rely on it more. People, when they want to know the answer to something, they pull up, they'll look at the Google AI that gives you an answer. And that's wrong. Like, I don't know what percentage of the time, but like, so using this as an example, over the weekend, my wife wanted to know if there was a book that was in this genre of something that she was reading. Is there another book like this that I would like? It was about a topic. I forget what the subject was. And it said, yes, here's the book and here's the author. Neither the author nor the book exist. Mm-hmm. It just made it up. And are we relying on something that's unreliable and we're already into it because it's so easy?
Well, we're definitely doing that. We definitely already have put way too much trust into AI. People just think like, oh, it's an authority on a topic. It's not. In many, many cases, it's just wrong, like the example you just used. But I think the real problem, more than us putting too much trust in this technology, it still has to do with the technology. I just think our culture is so addicted to instant gratification that, let's say, like, I'm someone who's definitely been very insecure about the way that I look before. If I were to just, instead of sitting with that emotion and working through it, I could just go, oh, I'll just have an authority tell me what's really happening. I can just run to ChatGPT or I can just run to Reddit and get either positive or negative affirmations of what's going on. I think that's the bigger problem, is we are just so uncomfortable with dealing with things ourselves or sitting in an unpleasant emotion that we crave external validation, and it's never been easier to get that external validation. Even if you're seeking negative external validation, like people do hurt themselves. There are things, yeah, like people have a drive to do that. There are things where it's like, oh, it's better off if I don't know, but I'm going to do it anyway. You know, it's just, I don't know if I can back up, but I do think it's just more of a, like a self-control issue. And that needs to be addressed more than the technology itself, if that makes sense. Like, I think it comes more from within. I think it takes a level of self-reflection that a lot of people just aren't doing. Like, it's not crossing their mind that, like, maybe this isn't the smartest or healthiest way to handle this. Just because it's available, they just assume that it's good and right and fine, when no, it could actually be something that's really bad for you.
Do you guys think, Andrew, do you think that this is a matter of, this is super easy? Like, it's super, like, AI is so easy to do. You just open up your phone, pull up the app, and you can use it. Or is this an avoidance of actually asking human beings these questions?
Both.
You think both?
Yeah.
Because I find that to be an interesting part, too. Like, why wouldn't you just ask somebody you know? Or are you just afraid they're going to sugarcoat and be nice because they know you and they like you? So you don't feel like you're going to get the honest answer.
You also don't want to, I mean, maybe you don't want to be a person who asks that all the time, right? You want to be the person that's constantly going to your friends like, am I ugly? Mm-hmm. Like, even if you want to, you're like, okay, eventually they might start to get bothered by that and get tired of doing that and go, stop asking me that.
It just feels like the whole mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all? Like, except in that case, you're going to get the positive answer because
the mirror is bound to you, right? Like, I'm really stuck. This may just be, Wheeler, you're 53. You didn't grow up with this tool, so you're not going to see it the same way that someone who's younger. But you guys are quite a bit younger, and you guys, I mean, is it? Do you rely on AI as much as you hear these stories?
No.
So it's probably people even younger than you guys then. It's probably people in their 20s.
Maybe. Sol brings up a good point on the stream. I think one thing we should remember is that whatever information we get from AI should only be used as a starting point. Don't take it as it is, especially at the current level of maturity.
Yeah.
But I think since it's available, people just look at it and go like, oh, it's the solution. Like, oh, it's for sale, so that means it's good, right? Like, it's kind of like you go to the grocery store and you see something that's labeled organic. It's like, well, it's good for me. I don't know. Sometimes they just slap that label on things. It doesn't actually mean that it's good for you. It's the same thing with AI. It's interesting that you brought up the Snow White thing, the mirror, mirror thing. Because Snow White was never my favorite as a kid, but, you know, they just released the one with Rachel Zegler. So it was on the Wikipedia for the actual fairy tale, not for the movie, just to kind of, like, refresh myself with the actual story. The whole mirror, mirror thing, like, the witch is so clearly the person in the wrong there. Because at first I was like, well, maybe it's the mirror that's evil. And it's like, no, the mirror's just kind of telling the truth. It's the witch's or the queen, whatever she is. Yeah. It's her problem for continuously going and needing that validation so badly and prioritizing that so much. And that's another problem here is like the fact that these people are turning to AI for this validation, positive or negative, is kind of an indication that they're putting too much value on looks.
Like,
looks are important. The way you portray yourself is important to first impressions and stuff, but it's not the most important thing. But we just live in this time where your looks can get you so far that I think people have tied up their value in their looks to a very, very unhealthy point. And that's something that should be addressed too.
Andrew, somebody named Mitch is really concerned about you.
Yeah, you gotta relax, champ. I'm doing fine.
I look up and there's four messages, and I don't know why this distracted me from the conversation, but it did. But Mitch posted on Facebook, Andrew, why aren't you talking? And then followed up with, you need to talk more, brother. And then somebody else later.
It's the same guy.
It's the same guy, I know, because it's MH89, and it's Mitch H on the Facebook. The other one's on YouTube. Said, Andrew, why don't you talk more? I'd love to hear you talk. You're the funny one.
I mean, Andrew, I appreciate the concern,
Andrew,
but
why,
like,
aren't you talking more, buddy?
Yeah, no kidding.
That's very nice, Mitch.
Yeah, it's nice
thank
of you,
Mitch.
And Andrew is very funny.
I am. Thank you.
I'm sorry. I've been rambling
really
about
humble.
Magic mirrors.
I gotta give my pals room to talk.
Yeah, yeah. I think
I also didn't have anything interesting to say about that. And I thought, and these two were doing a really good job.
What is going on now? Andrew Andrews is saying, "Who's Andrew?" What's happening? Just to get back on topic for a second here, shout out to Wes. He says he's 45, uses AI all the time just to learn new subjects, use it as a tutor.
Yeah.
That's the way to use
it. It's a good starting point, as you put it, Rach.
I think the mistake people make is, like, somehow these AI companies have convinced some people in the population that it's like AI is the truth and AI is going to save us all.
Well, Grok is clearly our savior.
Right. And it's like, no, it's still flawed. Like, you wouldn't put this much trust into a human. All AI is a... It's just a gathering of human knowledge.
I mean,
it's
a hyper,
drawing from something that we don't already know.
It's a hyper-powered search engine at the moment. Down the road, maybe it's more, but right now it's just a glorified search engine and probably a little bit better. Like, I mentioned, like, it recognized the stupid photo of me looking like Steve Rand on the Outsiders, which is what I was dressed up as. And when I put in a photo from when I was in high school, I showed you guys, I don't think I talked about it on the air, but I found a picture of my brother and I from high school in Toronto, like out front of like the city hall, like downtown Toronto. Mm-hmm. We went a little trip there with my uncle. And I took the picture of us, and it was a funny picture. We looked like high school dorks, and I looked irritated to be in a photo. I just uploaded it. Before I asked it anything, it simply said, oh, look at that. That's in downtown Toronto, right in front of the, and I didn't even know that's where the picture was taken. And then it knew that right away. Like, it's advanced and it's smart. It's better than just a plain old Google search in that kind of way. But as I pointed out, a lot of these AIs just get things wrong or make things up. And that's why you can't rely on it, even though it is a useful tool. To me, it's just a little bit more like Google at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It's a search engine and it's a starting point. Because even if you search something on Google, you'll get, I don't know what, let's say you get 10,000 returns. They're not all valid. They're not all legit. Some of them are BS. Some of them are real. And being able to tell the difference is important. And right now with AI, we got to be very careful.
Shout out to Mitch, kind of explaining the comments a little bit. And hello, Adriana. Hi, sweetheart. Hope you're having a good day.
Hey, Adriana.
Wheels, you want to end this segment by giving away some Creed tickets?
Well, you can do that. No.
I'm happy to. We are giving away right now. We're actually going to do this a couple times during the show, so keep listening if you miss your chance now. We're giving away two tickets to see Creed at Thunder Ridge Nature Arena in Ridgedale, Missouri. This is happening on August 2nd of this year. Let's give them to caller number five right now, 436-7900. Caller number five gets a pair of tickets to see Creed at Thunder Ridge Nature Arena, 436-7900.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Alone, listless, breakfast table and otherwise empty.
Hi, DGS on Friday. Dave out today, back on Monday. Rachel, Andrew, Kevin hanging out with you. If you're watching on the stream, the chat is just exploding.
I'm loving it.
A lot of interaction between chatters, and it's all friendly so far. Keep it that way. We don't need to be smacking people.
Hey, Andrew, what was the name of our Creed ticket winners? First name.
Donna.
There you go. Enjoy,
congrats,
Donna.
Congrats, Donna. Hope you have fun at the Creed concert. We will be giving away more tickets later in the show.
Awesome.
So stay tuned, all you Creed fans.
Mm-hmm.
Let us flash back to Friday's past.
All right, let's do it. 489 years ago. That's a long time ago. 1536. The authority of the Pope was declared void in England by King Henry VIII.
Oh, boy.
What an interesting guy.
He was a troublemaker,
Henry VIII. He wanted things done his way, didn't he? 78 years ago, in 1947, Harry S. Truman signed the Presidential Succession Act, which established the Speaker of the House and the Senate President pro tempore as third and fourth in the line of succession for the Oval Office.
Boom.
56 years ago, in 1969, just before midnight on a Friday evening, Ted Kennedy drove his car off of a bridge near Martha's Vineyard. His passenger passed away.
Chappaquiddick.
Mm-hmm.
Teddy swam to safety, leaving his passenger in the car. Then he left the scene and didn't report it to the police for several hours. That's not good.
No, that's bad.
He went on to proudly serve in the U.S. Senate until his death in 2009.
You know, when you have the right last name and wealth, things tend to go away.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. 39 years ago in 1986, Aliens starring Sigourney Weaver was released.
You guys Aliens fans?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's good film.
Fantastic.
New
movie.
Series coming out.
Huge fan.
Is Sigourney in it?
No, it's futuristic. It's on Earth. It's called Alien Earth.
Whoa.
Yeah, those guys made it to Earth. It's going to be bad.
Have you guys watched the first Alien, Rachel?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Those are great. I liked all of them, really. I think they were all pretty entertaining.
Yeah, they've all been good.
Oh, Alien's like a top five for me. And I really love that movie.
And obviously, you know, the newer ones. Covenant was really good.
Mm-hmm. They're fine.
And what was it? What was the first one?
Prometheus.
I thought that was really fun.
They're fine.
Yeah.
30 years ago in 1995, Barack Obama published Dreams of My Father. The book came out 13 years before Obama became president. Hmm. 24 years ago in 2001, Jurassic Park 3 was released. We had no idea that 1 million more Jurassic Park films would be coming out.
We had no idea that a movie as bad as Jurassic Park 3 would be like the third best Jurassic Park movie.
Man, you just add Chris Pratt and you've got a whole new thing to contend with.
I saw a tweet yesterday that summed this up really well. It was from the first movie. And the line, obviously, it's one of the most famous lines in the movie, right? It's your scientists.
I'm being eaten by a velociraptor. Is that the line?
It says your scientists were so preoccupied with if they could, they never stopped to think if they should. All the sequels fall right into that. All right, just after 2:30 here on DGS, Dave out today. We got Rachel, Andrew, me, and then our buddy Bernie joining us. And, of course, Bernie, this is kind of our pregame show for the Redbird Rush Hour coming up.
Yeah, man.
At 5 o'clock, it'll be you and me and Matt Pauly kicking things around with the second half getting started tonight.
Well, you know, let me speak on behalf of all of the KMOX listeners. It's great to have Kevin Wheeler back. and I know you've been back for a couple days, but I missed you, buddy.
Thank you. I missed you guys, too. I got the volume, right, both in terms of, like, level of sound and amount of words. I got the dual meaning volume.
I think I'm guilty of that too.
You and I are brothers in arms, man.
All kinds of words. Hey, man, you know, you can't keep up with me because I'm also writing like 3,000 words a day too. So anyway.
No, I can't. I can only speak them. I can't write them. If I write them down, it's not nearly as good. And obviously you've been doing that for a good long time. So symbolic second half, right? We know it's not the mathematical second half, but it's the symbolic second half after the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. The 13 games that will decide all, or at least decide something at the trade deadline, right?
It's going to have a lot of influence, not only on the wild card race, but it'll certainly sway to some extent with John Mozeliak's thinking we'll be going into the trade deadline, because that final game of the 13 game stretch is the night before trading deadline. So, this sounds strange because whatever will be, but if the Cardinals are like have a really good 13 game stretch, well, then you could understand why they'd be much more inclined to try to add to their team. And what that means, I have no idea. But on the other hand, if they have a really bad 13 game stretch, well, then the decision is going to be made for them. You know, the worst thing in a way that could happen is if the Cardinals are like 6-7 or 7-6. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean.
Right in the middle, which is where they've been all year, right?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the point, right? Doesn't that fit like what the team has been now for several years, just kind of eternally stuck in the middle?
Yep, no doubt about it. And listen, Wheels, I don't know how you feel and whether you've talked about it today, and you and I haven't texted for a couple, three, 4 days, but here's where I am. If people want to know what I think, and I'm not saying, but here's what I think, and it's an honest opinion. Even if the Cardinals are still mathematically in the race, it doesn't mean that they are realistically or legitimately in the race. And I think John Mozeliak is going to have to just avoid falling into a trap of where he's kind of dreaming of 2006 and 2011 and. To me, man, if there's any doubt at all, you got to sell.
Yeah, I think that's the question, right? If there's doubt, I totally agree with you. And this is what I wanted to run by you kind of. And again, this is more of a tease for what we'll get more depth later with Redbird Rush Hour and with Matt Pauly. But we know there'll be different listeners, so it's okay to get it started now. But I think it's interesting to me. I've been trying to decide in three, because there's three possible scenarios here, right? The first one I'll throw at you. What are you thinking? What's your gut feel if there are where they are now, regardless of what the record is? You're a game out or a game and a half out. You're there, but you're not gaining any ground. Do you think they just hold? Do you think they just stand pat and keep on playing it out?
They probably will. I wouldn't do that, but then again, I'm not in charge. Listen, last year they were convinced they were in the race. At the trade deadline, they were, I think, almost like game and a half out, virtually the same as they are now.
Yeah.
And they acquired Eric Fetty and Tommy Pham, and then the team fell apart. I think the Cardinals are just very fragile now. Mm-hmm. So if they win 7 out of the 13 games, that's not going to change my mind about how fragile they are.
Right.
I mean, first of all, Arizona is. They're 3 games under 500 at home. They have a losing record on the season. The Rockies are the Rockies, and I'll just point out that visiting teams have won 36 out of 46 games at Coors Field this year. So my point is, I mean, I'm not going to get out the party balloons, as Joe Strauss would say, if the Cardinals no, if they go in and, you know, sweep the Rockies, yeah. I mean, they're supposed to. So I'm going to be like really level-headed about all this. I just think you got to have, it's really, really important for John Mozeliak to have like clear eyes, clear head, and be realistic about where his, what his team really is.
Yeah, I think the number one thing, regardless, I mean, I doubt I would even change my mind on this, Bernie, if they go 13-0. But the one thing I would definitely not do, even if I'm buying, I'm not trading any players that I think I can count on. You know, I'm not trading any of my most important young players, regardless of that. Even if I do go 13-0, which is not going to happen. And I think that there's an, we were talking about this yesterday. Actually, Nate Gatter and I talked a bit about it yesterday on Redbird Rush Hour. There are definitely scenarios where I would trade Ryan Helsley, for example, but I want to get something of real quality. So if somebody comes to me with a guy that can be in my rotation next year, or somebody that solves a problem for me in some way, I definitely want to make that move at the deadline. But I also want to weigh that against just going qualifying offer, getting a draft pick. By the way, getting a draft pick that you can trade, because you can trade those compensation picks. You can't trade your regular ones, but you can trade that. And it also comes with the slot money. So that comp pick is more than just whatever the player would be. It's also the slot for that money, which means you can go above with certain people, below. It gives you more flexibility. It has to be a better deal than that.
Well, if you're asking me that they shouldn't give Ryan Helsley away, I agree with that.
Yeah, yeah. No, and that's not really the suggestion. It's just really hard to figure out what that would be. But there are teams, Byrne, that have guys that we're talking about. Like, I think the Yankees are a team that have guys that we're talking about. Now, I don't know that they want Helsley, but there are teams that have the players that we're talking about that could be a part of your rotation next year, or could be can fix a problem for you, right? Clear up some of your issues.
There's a lot of teams that would be circling around Ryan Helsley, hoping to get him at a reduced value. But I also know there are teams. I was talking to some guy that works in a front office for another team in the National League, and he said, yeah, a lot of people are interested in Helsley, and a lot of people also think they have ways to make him better than what he's been this season.
Yes.
He's got a flat fastball. Mm-hmm. There's no movement on it, and that's why they're crushing it. And this gentleman told me, he said, for the life of me, you know, we don't understand why he doesn't throw the curveball, because it's been a good pitch for him and he doesn't throw it. Someone else told me, said, you just know that Dodgers analytics department is looking at Helsley and they're saying over and over and over again, change up, change up, change up, change up. You know, they'll find a remedy, because they always do.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing, right? I mean, you know, when you look at the curveball and usage, I don't know if it's a feel thing or what, but
I don't know.
I mean, you look at the performance against it last year. He'd barely thrown it this year. He's thrown it, I think, 28 times this year. So it's not been good this year because he's not throwing it. But in the past, when he's thrown it, it's been very effective. 2022, there were zero hits against his curveball, and he threw it 100 times.
That's why I brought it up, because it's been a really good pitch for him. But he doesn't use it anymore.
Well, and the other thing is, he throws too many fastballs. We've talked about that. Like, if your fastball's not effective, stop throwing it.
Of course. And everybody knows it's coming when he's behind in the count.
Right.
So you're basically, you have people say, well, wonder if he's tipping. He's not tipping pitches. All they got to do is look.
Yeah.
When he's behind in the count, they're going to get a fastball. I don't know about Helsley. For example, you know, I've seen some fans and people say, and I'm not knocking anybody, they say, like, well, they ought to just try to sign him to a contract after the season. Well, I really, first of all, you know, the arrow's pointing down is worse before, and also just there's always an injury issue. But the other thing is, the way the Cardinals use him with the Ali Marmol, Ryan Helsley rules, I mean, you know, it's like, it's got to be like a perfect situation for him to pitch.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you got to run him ragged. I'm not saying, well, you send him out there in lost causes or anything. But my gosh, this guy will go, you know, 10 days at a time where he'll pitch like one or two times. And I think that's another reason why he's not sharp. I mean, there's the whole thing with like the Ryan rules, you know, like the Jordan rules. I personally think it's excessive. You know, you can't have, you know, the planets align and the moon, you know, the moon is in the seventh, Jupiter's in the seventh house. You know, you can't have like everything perfect. You know, you can't go, you can't have an astrology reader like coming in to say, well, this is a bad planet. We shouldn't use him tonight. And I can see you're not understanding you're not getting the humor, you don't care for it in that. But my point is that I don't know, man. You got to be careful with relievers, but the Cardinals are going way too far with this.
Yeah. I tell you this, Bernie, I have a bigger philosophical thing. He's 31 as of today, by the way, so happy birthday, mm-hmm. Ryan Helsley. Yeah. If I'm a mid-market team, I'm never paying top market closer price ever. If I'm the Yankees, I'll do it. If I'm the Dodgers, I'll do it because I got the leeway, man. I can do it. I can't as a mid-market team. And look, even the Cardinals, when they're a top 10 payroll, are a mid-market team. I can't justify $12 to $15 million a year for a spot that only throws 60 innings a year.
Well, that's right. And I can tell you what, if Bloom has any say in it, and it will be his decision to make after the regular season, Heim Bloom's not going to do that.
No, I wouldn't think so. Not when relievers are so volatile anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Can I throw something out there?
Absolutely.
Maybe I should save it for Redbird Rush Hour.
Use it as a tease.
You know, when we talk about, well, here are, right? I wish that one guy's never mentioned, and I'll explain it later on, but you know who's a great trade candidate? Number one, because his performance since like a certain control remaining after this season. So you're not renting him. You have him in place for next year too. That would be Arrow. I was reading the Athletic, and you know, it's like, oh my gosh, everybody's looking for left-handed relievers. But the teams that have really, they're not trading their guys.
Yeah.
So teams are desperate. What lefty relievers? So people talk about Steven Matz having all this value.
Uh-huh.
Jojo Romero has more value.
I agree.
Because he's under contract. You know what his ERA is since like April the 27th?
Super low, because it was bad before that.
0.44.
Wow.
13 inherited runners. None of them have scored. So why do we always talk about Steven Matz? Oh, yeah, there'd be a lot of teams who want to look. Jojo Romero's got more value. He's under contract.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's a great point.
And it's
not like you have long-term control either, right? You're not giving up 4 years of the guy.
No. So they got to be realistic. If he's got value and teams are calling you and they're going to offer you something good, you got to move a guy like Jojo Romero. See, this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The Cardinals just can't have these visions of grandeur. I mean, they got to do what's best for 26, 27, and so on.
All right. On that note, Bern, we'll make this fairly quick because we're going to talk more about this later. This is just, again, a little tease for the Redbird Rush Hour. Jordan Walker's supposed to be coming back today, it sounds like. They sent Thomas Ajayi down to Memphis yesterday. It sounds like they're clearing it for Jordan Walker. I think the runway for this year is closed for him until after the deadline. Unless you clear some things up. Like, there are other guys that have outperformed him that are playing better. You need to have Gorman in there rather than Walker. Burleson has earned at-bats. Unless you're clearing out Newt or something along those lines, then maybe there's room for all of those guys that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. But I also don't think that he's a guy you have to decide on this year. I think there's no reason why you can't. And I got a comp for how a player was handled that I wanted to run by you, which is it's how Spencer Torkelson was handled. So Spencer Torkelson was the first pick in the draft. At one point, he was the number one prospect in baseball, according to like MLB.com, Baseball America, and all that. He had a 30-homer season in the big leagues. The very next year, he was so bad, they sent him down to AAA. And then the next spring, which was this spring, they said, look, you do not have a spot on this team. You have to earn a spot on this team. And he did, and he's having a good year. I don't think where we are in Walker's development means he cannot go back to Memphis. I don't think it means he's guaranteed a roster spot moving forward. I think it's okay if a number one pick who was the number one prospect in baseball can be handled that way, then Jordan Walker can be handled that way.
Totally agreed. And they don't have to make a decision anyway. I mean, you know, if they're even to think about moving on, you know, they don't have to make a decision. I understand people being impatient. And I do think if they spit the bit, I think Jordan Walker, I'm talking about, you know, where they go to the deadline and say, nah, it's not going to happen. Then he should play most days because what's the purpose?
Agreed. When you have, agreed.
You know, yeah. When your chances of making the playoffs, and by the way, if they make the playoffs, they're not going to last. So but you're out of contention. Jordan Walker should be in the lineup just about every day.
Bernie, tell us about Saliga and we'll talk to you again a little bit later.
I will.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we get to the top, Alvin Reed's going to join us at the top of the hour. So what else do we got? We got Dave Murray at 3:30, George Mahey at 4 o'clock, so we're going to be pretty busy the rest of the way. Did we ever get to – did we get through all of the Flashback Friday things, or did we leave any behind?
The other one – let me dig it out of the recycle bin here. Give me one
second. Look at me making the dumb request. I just did the thing that everybody tells you. Don't ask a question you don't know the answer to.
There was one more I wanted to get to. 12 years ago in 2013, Detroit became the largest city to ever file for bankruptcy.
Oh, boy.
$18 billion in debt. I remember when this happened – I never really saw a follow-up, though. But you're a Detroit guy.
Yeah, It's gone much better. I was just up there this past weekend visiting family. The downtown area is just booming. They got
That's great.
Now, granted, it's almost all built around sports teams and casinos.
Yeah.
But there's a Fox Theater right there across from the baseball stadium. The football and basketball and hockey stadiums, they're all right down there in the same couple of blocks. But there's a big, like a lot of restaurants in that district. The casinos are right down the road. So there's a lot concentrated there, but the city has done better. So by the way, the mayor of the city went to my high school.
Oh, that's cool.
Now he's older than me. I don't know him, but yeah.
Do you know like exactly what Detroit did to kind of turn it all around? Because I think we could use a little bit of that.
Well, I think the bankruptcy started the process.
Okay.
Yeah. And then they just started doing better, making better financial decisions, generally speaking. But look, when you have the ability to, you know, have four sports teams playing downtown, you've got stuff year round. That's a draw to people to come at least to that part of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're surrounding that with restaurants, entertainment district, casinos, Fox Theater. The Fox Theater's been there forever, but like that's all part of the draw, and that's just the part that we can't do here because we don't have an NFL team and we don't have an NBA team. And when you combine the four, you've got year-round draws to bring people in, and then you've got all the things that go with it. Like, we have Ballpark Village, but that's in one little spot. That's not that close to the Enterprise Center.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make a walk or make a quick drive to get over there if you were going to go there after a Blues game, for example. So it's a little more concentrated, and it's more than that. It's stuff that I don't keep up with not living there. But it's just been a little bit cleaner run. They're running better when it comes to making good decisions. I think, if I remember correctly, they also made a big push on public safety.
Mm-hmm.
And, whether it was increasing the number of police officers or just improving the way that they're deployed, they certainly have made a big effort because Detroit's got the same downtown issues and the same questions historically that we're talking about in St. Louis now. But they made a push to fix it. And it's different than it was when I lived there 25, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot safer. It's a lot more welcoming. At least in that commerce area that we're talking about.
But it gives you hope that, I mean, I know we don't have the NBA team or the NFL team, but there is a path towards a better downtown.
For sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.